All right, here we go. Believe the lies, so everything that I know says I gotta go, tired of going solo. But I'm never gonna go there again. This is what it is, this is who I am, this is where I finally take my stand. I didn't wanna fall, but I don't have to crawl. I'm not the one with two scarred hands. Giving him the best of everything that's left of the life inside this man. I've been born again. Yes. Good morning, everyone. Eddie Huff here with Dave Van Rissingham. Hey, Dave, do we have enough light on me this week? I'm not a silhouette.
Yeah.
I'm not a shadow of myself.
Yeah. Last week he was in the dark. Why am I so dark?
Yeah.
I said it must be the German in
you. Yes, the German, you know. Yeah. My German gene was coming out.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was the black fella.
Yeah.
The black fella. We do this all the time, Ryan. Hey, we have a special guest today, Ryan Walters. Hey, Dave, do you want to introduce our guest, please?
Yeah, Ryan Walters has been serving Governor Stitt's cabinet as education secretary. Yep. And what does education secretary do? That's what I want.
Well, we're going to find out. Hey, Ryan, quick question. Give us a little bit of your background.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate you guys having me today. I'm a fan of the show, so love the work that you guys do here. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on with you guys. Yeah, so my background, I'm a public school teacher from McAllister, Oklahoma. That's where I was born and raised. I went back there. I was a history teacher there for 8 years. Started a nonprofit called Every Kid Counts Oklahoma that works in education reform. And then the governor appointed me to be his education secretary 2 years ago, and Dave already jumped right into that. You know, I mean, we're an interesting state. We have a statewide elected office, the state superintendent, that really has almost all the power over the Department of Education and over the public school system when it comes to introducing rules, regulations, things like that. And then we have an education secretary that serves on the cabinet that has some oversight over higher ed, career tech, and K-12, but it's very limited because of the way our system is kind of set up. So really largely functions as an advisory role to the governor on education policy, and then also trying to be a collaborator between all those different education groups that we have, agencies, to try to have some coordination to make sure that every student is getting options into getting into the workforce.
I see. Wow. And how did you end up becoming the governor's secretary of ed?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so I had met the governor when he was running for office, and we'd had some conversations along the campaign trail just about education, and I've always been passionate about it. When I was a teacher, I was selected to be a state finalist for Teacher of the Year. And what they make you do is, hey, you know, what's your policy? What's your platform? And so it really caused me to do a more in-depth analysis of, I kind of saw issues inside education from a teacher perspective, but it made me think much broader. And so when I'd run into the governor when he was running for office, I had several of those conversations with him about things I thought we could do a lot better. And so we knew each other a little bit. Then when I worked on my nonprofit, one of the things we really wanted was to make sure all students across the state had access to advanced placement classes, were things I was really passionate about. Being an AP history teacher myself, we did a quick survey and saw that Arkansas, and listen to this statistic, every high school in the state of Arkansas offered 4 AP classes for every child. Mm-hmm. Then we had 300 high schools in the state of Oklahoma that didn't offer a single one.
Wow.
And we thought, wow, this is like a, you know, you see some of that data that really jumps out at you is, well, why aren't we giving our students as many options as others? So that was something my nonprofit, we dove into to say, how can we do this? How can we provide better access? So I got back to working with the governor on that initiative, and we got talking about that. And so then as time went on, we began to have more conversations around education policy and what does a path look like moving forward. And again, we had a lot of alignment on our vision for that. And so then he ended up offering me the appointment to serve on his cabinet and to give some more insight into how we can move forward as a state.
That's great. That's really good. And so now, would you just give us a quick rundown on the state of education in Oklahoma? Because I remember under the prior administration, we kept hearing 49 is not good enough. Do you remember that, David?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were here then as well. 49 is not good enough. Where are we now? Are we still 49?
Yes, sir. And unfortunately, there was a study done last year that took into account our third grade scores, our eighth grade scores, our 11th grade scores, and some workforce alignment and put us again at 49th.
Wow.
And, you know, unfortunately, what we've seen is we've bubbled to 46th, 47th, but usually We're in that bottom 10 category in nearly all of the kind of student outcome categories. And so unfortunately, what we've seen is our system in which we're educating our kids isn't working best for every kid. And I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I think that we have to have change in the system for every child to have a better opportunity of success. And one of the things is, I think we have that opportunity as Oklahomans because we are a very conservative state that believes in the values of conservatism translates to academic success. Conservatism believes that every person is unique, created by God with certain individual rights and or individual talents. And we want to maximize individual liberty so that every person can forge that path forward. We also believe in the family unit, that the family unit is a huge part of our society, and having family involvement and engagement is so key. Those are the type of principles that translates into academic success. But what we've done is we've got a one-size-fits-all model on our kids. It doesn't work for every kid. And so what ends up happening is, and something, you know, I got four little ones at home. I've got a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a one about to turn one. And one of the things that you see, and it is heartbreaking as a teacher, is you see kids at a very young age that are excited about school. They like going to school. Somewhere along the way, kids become really apathetic about school. And what happens is then when kids don't see why education is important or how that works to them in the future, they're not engaged or not as involved. And all of a sudden, we see these test scores that show it, but then we see it in the workforce and we see it in just general, you know, happiness around the state when you see people that don't have alignment to their talents.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because this might be a great ad for the governor because he's got the Secretary of Education or the superintendent, the superintendent of education who's now running for governor, who is running on the fact that 49 is not good enough.
After eight years of being in charge,
49 is still not good enough, and she now wants to become governor of the state of Oklahoma. I would just shove that right back down her throat. But I don't want to divert from our discussion here. That just jumped out at me. I wanted to, because I think she's terrible. I think she is probably the absolute worst decision the state of Oklahoma has ever made in their lives, electing her as superintendent of education. But gladly she's gone, and let's just keep her totally out of politics in the future, and hopefully people make a good choice for the superintendent of education going forward. What do you propose? So how will you get us from 49th up the ladder?
Absolutely. And I mean, you made a great point here, and that's the reality. The state superintendent plays a vital role in how our students are doing in our education system. Not only do they run the Department of Education, they set forth the vision for education policy and what changes need to be made. We've been 49th in education. We've seen the superintendent there for seven, near going into 8 years. And again, not only have we not improved, what's the ideas? Yeah. What are you proposing us do? And I'm going to tell you, for the last 2 years, that's where I've been beating my head against the wall going, hey, we're proposing big ideas here. We're showing you how we think this will work. We're showing you how this will work best for kids. And your answer is no.
Yeah, she has no ideas. There are no ideas.
And that's exactly right.
I think it's even worse than that. With Joy Hoffmeister, when we needed her most was during the teacher walkout, the Wildcat strike of 18. And she was, you know, gagged. Why? Because of the money that came from the organized teacher apparatus that put her there. And her job is to keep our publicly funded schools operating under some discipline. Now, recently, we've had an issue with Stillwater. I'd like you to address that. If you can give us a concise storyline there and why you got involved.
Yes, sir. And I want to, you know, to Eddie's point too, because I didn't answer your question.
Right, sure.
You know, to Eddie's point, one of the things we have to do, we have to make sure that our parents have all options available to them. That's why I've been championing school choice, because here's the thing. Nobody knows better for their kids than their mom and their dad, and we have to have alignment to the resources that best meets the needs of every kid. Mm-hmm. And so many times what I see is, you know, if a kid wants to choose a private school or a charter school or homeschooling, great. Those options work for different kids in different ways. And for us as a state, we've got to continue to champion that. We have to continue to provide resources and make sure our teachers have the ability to be successful. I mean, I'm a teacher, and you talk to teachers, we've increased the education budget 5 of the last 6 years, and ask them if they feel like all that money is getting to them. Mm-hmm. Ask them if they see the resources getting to them. That's why the governor and I have championed this bill to give teachers a pathway to make 6 figures and stay in the classroom and say, listen, I want our best and brightest to have incentives to stay in teaching, not, hey, you want to make more money, go be an administrator. Well, that's a different skill set.
Yeah.
A school administrator is not the same. Hey, I'm glad we have folks that choose that path.
Right.
But I want to give financial incentives for our best and brightest teachers to stay in the classroom. But we've got to find more ways to provide parents more options and provide more transparency in the process so that parents can see how the school is doing and what's going on in the school. We've got to make sure that our teachers have the ability to be successful. And we've got to drive innovation into the system and make sure that we're getting our kids ready and maximizing their talents. And for me, when I talk to young people, one of the most exciting conversations you can have with a young person is when you find what they're good at. When you think about yourself, you know, absolutely, isn't it such a fantastic feeling when you figure out this is my niche? I'm really good at
affirmation,
it.
Isn't
That's
it?
That's right. And then you have this inner motivator that just takes off where you go, hey, I'm good at this. There's something unique about me that we've got to start finding that in kids much earlier in the education system. And that's where I talked about we're over-standardized. We're, no. Every kid, you do this. There's not one clear path to success.
Right.
And it's funny, we're seeing that now as we see all these successful folks in the business world and in other realms that, hey, they didn't go to college. Hey, you know, they started off this way and then they veered this way. But that's where we've got to have an education system that's agile enough that every learner finds out.
Oh, yeah. You know, you're really preaching to the choir here. I mean, as far as me, everything you're saying is really wanting me to jump and sing hallelujah, because I've thought this for a long, long time. I am not a proponent, honestly, of Christian schools. I've been, you know, I used to get bombarded when I was with Pat Campbell on KFAQ because I felt as a Christian, you were taking the salt from the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're supposed to be in the world, not of it, instead of we're not of the world. I mean, we're not in the world, but we're of it, you know, and so the schools have gone to hell. Is everybody at school? Public schools are going to hell. Yeah, we're sending them there because we're pulling out. And it's not because we're pulling the kids out. We're pulling the parents who make the PTAs. We make the school boards and everything. And each time you pull one group out, it keeps going down, 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 down. Now, we're at a point now almost of no return because the schools are getting so bad. It's almost like a point of no return. So I'm almost ready to join the other
side. I'll sacrifice your kids, but not mine, right?
Well, but see, I went the other way. I took my kids from Christian school and did put them in public school. In fact, I made my kids sign a contract saying, against our father's wishes, we want to go to public school and we will never, ever complain. And they never did either because they knew they signed that contract. But and it worked out for me, okay. But our kids were able to see then, because when, and I'm sorry to take up your time. This is my little preaching time. But but when my kids saw kids in public school mess up, they said, "Dad, why are these kids messed up? Well, they don't know Jesus, you know, or they're messed up." When they see kids and teachers mess up in Christian school, what are you going to tell them? Right? You can tell them the same thing, but they're supposed to be Christian. Well, yeah. But anyway, so I believe we're more powerful in public schools if we make the difference. But it takes people like you, or people from the top, to make the ground in public schools safe again to be able to send your kids back. And that's what the problem, the CRT, teaching sex education, what Florida's going through right now, all that crap that's going in. Islamic education, you name it, that's being in. And that's what's really hurting education to me. We've forgotten what the three R's are.
That's right.
You know, we're teaching everything. Everything's that's important right. except that's right. reading, writing, arithmetic, that's right. and all of that, right?
No, I mean, you know, and to your point, Eddie, you're spot on. You know, Dave, you were talking about how, you know, what's going on in Stillwater. And here's what we see. We're a very conservative state. We have conservative values. I mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. Conservative values translate into academic success for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a radical left-wing group that says, No. In Stillwater, just to be, you know, just a high level, they have a male bathroom, they have a female bathroom, mm-hmm. and they have a private bathroom for, hey, look, if that's an issue, if you're going through something where, hey, I don't feel comfortable there, and I might not feel comfortable there either, private bathroom, no questions asked, there you go.
That's accommodation.
Right. And guess what? Most schools do that. And, yeah. and they provide it. We did it when I was a teacher in public school. And hey, it's fine. There's an accommodation made. Every student can go to the restroom mm-hmm. with dignity. And mm-hmm. No. That it's wasn't good enough for the right? far. Yeah. No. That was not good enough for the far left. Yeah. They came in and said, no. Yeah. If a male student wants to use a female bathroom, you have to let them. They pushed it through the school board. Mm-hmm. I started having parents reach out to me 2 months ago saying, our daughter is not drinking liquid during the day because she doesn't want to go to the bathroom because there's males in the bathroom and she's been in the bathroom with multiple male students and she feels uncomfortable. Middle school girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And thinking about all the things, I mean, mm-hmm. the conversations with parents to me is just that the discomfort and then the fear for their safety of being in a unsupervised bathroom, no adults, mm-hmm. with male students. It's unacceptable.
They've got enough stuff going on in their minds. They've got enough stuff to deal with particularly at that age. That's you know, say 9, 10, 11, kids are starting to, puberty is a lot earlier than it used to be. Mm-hmm. It's hitting 8, 9 years old, where it used to be 12, 13, 14. Mm-hmm. Now it's starting to hit in a younger age. All of these, I mean, it's insanity. And you know exactly what you're saying, right? It's not enough. Yeah, it's like you're saying, how much is enough? Just a little bit more, right? Yeah, they're always going to push for a little bit more, and this is the real battle.
Something that the leftists in their agenda conveniently leave out is the reality of malice, that a young male with testosterone going nuts and might with malice.
Did you say going nuts or growing nuts?
Eddie. All right, here we go.
I just want to be sure for our audience that we want to be
going crazy here, right?
Okay.
Yeah, he's got just okay. So might seek access to where the girls are,
right?
Including locker rooms, right? Not because he identifies with them, but because he desires them. And you know that you're a teacher. You know you can't be everywhere the time at the same time.
That's right.
And so as a parent, yeah, especially when I don't have free access to the schools, I got to get a hall pass, access pass as a visitor. Right. You're asking a lot. You know, that's the thing. Don't you see that as well in what you're looking at?
Absolutely. And it's the belief of the left, and you've seen it with Joe Biden, when he comes out and says, hey, guys, I've been a teacher, so this is my 10th year, you know, with students. So I still teach a course, but so I've been in the classroom for about 10 years. I've always heard this from the day I got in. We want parents involved. We want them at parent-teacher conferences. We want more parent engagement. And as soon as parents start getting more involved during COVID, the Biden administration labels them domestic terrorists for showing up at school board meetings. Because guess what? They believe the government knows best. And that parents need to be, hey, just trust the government bureaucrats to figure out what's best for your kids. That is a core belief they have. Mm-hmm. It is the exact opposite of what the truth is. The truth is that, hey, I'll take it from a personal perspective. There's no one who loves or cares more about my kids than my wife and myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's common sense. A parent has a connection with a child like no one else will have. And I can't believe we're even having to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. But the left doesn't believe that to be true. They believe that government bureaucrats are altruistic. They're all knowing, and that they need to make these decisions. And so what happens in Stillwater, it should be an easy decision. It's not complicated at all. That's why I keep, in the letters I write to him, keep going, this isn't complicated. You keep asking for clarity, it's crystal clear, guys. You have a path forward. You just don't want to do it because you have a far-left extreme group that's hammering you guys, and you guys want to back down to them and jeopardize student safety and put our young female students in discomfort. That's ridiculous. We're not going to do this to appease the far left.
Right, and honestly, Ryan, I don't think it's not innocent as that. You almost make it sound a little innocent. And it's not even, I mean, even as you're stating it, it's not innocent, but it's worse than that. They are specifically practicing social engineering. They're specifically wanting to totally take any moral constraint out of society. Mm-hmm. They do not want any constraint on American society. It, it, we want to turn it, it reminds me of the story of Sodom and Gomorrah when the crowd came to Solomon, not Solomon's house, Lot's house. Give us your, these guys, these angels. No, you can have my daughters. It's almost getting to that point. And give us your children is basically what they're saying. Give us your children. And we can't do that.
That's right.
We can't do that. And I applaud you for wanting to stand up and take a step in the right direction and say, not on my watch.
And to the point you made earlier, I think is important here too. I've had a lot of teachers reach out to me that say, thank you. We came to teach. We signed up because we wanted to work with young people. And we got the same thing with the critical race theory stuff. I had teachers emailing me going, hey, I signed up to teach math. I signed up to teach history. Not this stuff that are starting to come down the pike. And we're starting to see this more and more with, to your point, what we're seeing in Florida, where they're stepping out on this, and we're digging into all of our curriculum now, too, to see what's all in here. And I'm getting feedback from teachers going, hey, here's some of the stuff that I'm getting now. We are going to get to a point where good people aren't going to want to go teach in the classroom. Already, they're not being supported in the classroom. We don't have the discipline in the classrooms that we need for our teachers. And then if we're going to start allowing folks to push indoctrination down to our teachers, folks aren't going to want to get in the profession to deal with all that.
Right. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah. With the exception of Eddie, most of the Republican Party has to deal with the reality we've been duped. We were sold a radical leftist superintendent the last 8 years. Eddie knew better. He was willing to vote for a Democrat, you know, because he thought he's better than him. We don't want to be duped again this time. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to commend both you and John Cox. John sat in your chair a few months back, had nothing but kind words to say about you individually. I watched both of you at forums. I've watched you and particularly John. I don't know about, I believe her name's April Grace. I mean, most of us think that you guys are kind of the three viable candidates. What should we look for? Yep. We don't want to be duped.
I think it is essential now to have a true conservative in this position. Mm-hmm. You guys have seen it. The left has decided, and by the way, they've done it for years, to the schools are the future, and if we push our agenda into schools, it's a long play. The long play is if we have our kids and they're, and I mean, and this was, you know, decades ago, trying to make sure that, trying to push curriculum that kids thought that that bigger government solved problems. Mm-hmm. You know, that Ronald Reagan wasn't a good president. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we saw this for years, but now that the left has just lost their mind, now it's getting more extreme. So it's not just the subtle or the heavy-handed ways of going, hey, well, actually, the Democrats were the good presidents and these were the bad presidents. No, no, no. Now it is complete social engineering, to your point, in the classroom. You have to have a conservative in that position who says no, no to all of it, no to all the federal intervention in education. By the way, the feds are obsessed with controlling education. And I believe this because that pesky 10th Amendment to them says that all the power is not given over to the federal government or reserved to the states and the people, respectively. And that means education.
Yeah.
Education is a state issue, which is why the feds are obsessed with pushing things into the states.
I'm hearing Biden's trying to defund charter schools.
That's right. Yep.
How is that happening?
So what he's starting to do is changing the rules for a new charter school to be implemented, the way that that would work, and is forcing charters to go get permission from the local public schools first and lay out a plan for how they're meeting the needs that traditional public school has given them before they can even get started.
Well, I heard another rule is that the public school has to be overpopulated. Did I hear that right?
That's correct. That's their example of when you go to that school and they basically give you the ability to open up. The example that the feds gave was they need to be overpopulated. That's really what we're seeing as the reason to start a charter school is when their school has too many kids.
Yeah, but one of the most established charter schools in the state is Tulsa School of Arts and Sciences. Mm-hmm. There's been a waiting list for 15 years to get on. And yet we closed probably half of our school campuses, public school campuses in Tulsa during that time. So TSAS would get defunded under that.
That's right.
Well, I don't think it's retroactive, is it? I think it's only for new ones being established.
Oh.
So they won't close that one down, but you won't get any new charter schools because they won't be able to get TPS to agree
now,
to a new one.
Texas and Florida are probably two of the biggest states for implementing charter schools, hundreds in each state. We're just now trying to pick up their example, right? So that would keep us from getting to where they're at.
That's
and
right.
we wonder why we can't be a top 10
but,
state.
But here's another problem I have. You will still see charter schools, but that game will be, it'll be a new game played. You will see a lot of these, what I call jackleg preachers in the black communities in particular, who will work out deals with the public schools. It's happened in North Tulsa. We've seen it already. I don't know about Oklahoma City, but you'll get a special sweetheart deal where somebody will make some money and they'll open a little charter school, they'll call it, and they'll open it in these black communities. And then they'll say, look, see, we're doing it, and then try to make the black community happy. And somebody will get paid, and these new charter schools will not be meeting the real need of the community, actually teaching the kids who need it the most.
Yeah.
It'll be no better and probably worse than the public schools in those community. In those community. I don't remember, was it 2014, 13 or 14, we had this emergency in Tulsa where we had all this overcrowding. And so we came up with this bond issue. And we needed all this money because we had this overcrowding of schools in Tulsa. And then as soon as we gave $353 million in bond money to...
For capital improvements, right?
For capital improvements and all this for new, these schools, they shut down 14 schools in North Tulsa. And all of a sudden, these overcrowded schools got 14 schools worth of kids that didn't have enough kids in them to keep them open. And so it showed we were lied to.
Right.
Instead of taking these overcrowded schools and just sending some of those kids to these underpopulated schools, we just lied and didn't mention those schools. And let me throw this idea I have, I've had for some time. Why not? And I think I know the answer, but I've often said, why not take and pay bonus, you're talking about six figures, but say you take the worst performing schools in Tulsa or Oklahoma City and those areas that have poor performing schools, and you offer an immediate 20% bonus for any teachers in the high performing schools, a 20% bonus to go teach in those schools. And if they up the performance of those students, you know, you get an extra 10%.
Merit pay.
Merit pay, exactly. And to me, it sounds like a very, you know, logical idea. And I can see people in Union, Jenks, and Edison, and in these better performing areas screaming to high heaven, no, you can't do that. They want to hold on to those teachers, and that will probably keep the district from ever doing anything like that.
Eddie, I agree. Here's what we've seen. Memphis has a program that does this. Oh. Dallas has a program that does this. And what they said is, and again, this, and by the way, part of the bigger conversation that we need to have is testing. What does testing and accountability look like? And I'm going to tell you right now, the thing that we should be most focused on is academic growth of our kids. And to your point, what we need to see is when teachers, when you have kids enter a teacher's classroom, and they experience large academic growth, that's an awesome teacher. I mean, you think if you have a kid come in from a grade level behind, but they catch up and get a grade level and a half worth of growth in a year, that's a great teacher. Mm-hmm. And what we can do is we can start incentivizing teachers to go to areas that have traditionally, because people ask me all the time, well, what would you do if you if you were in charge of a school tomorrow, what would you do? I'd go find the best math teacher in the state. I'd go find the best English teacher in the state. And I'd say, what do you need? And every teacher that comes here, you're going to train them. And you let me, hey, you know what you're doing. I want to help you. Let's bring in folks around you. And I'm going to tell you right there, you can put in, and again, all the statistics show this, and one of my favorite statistics about the impact of a great teacher not only has a tremendous impact on the kids that year, we show in studies over the last few years that students will continue growing at a faster rate after having a great teacher. Mm-hmm. So you think about that. You think about the teachers in your head. Teachers can turn that switch in a kid where all of a sudden they've got the learning principles
the
down.
The joy of discovery, sudden, isn't
the motive,
it?
Absolutely. And so if we can do more, because here, you want me to get kind of pie in the sky for a minute. Pie in the sky for me, the best thing you could do for underperforming kids is put them with a great teacher.
Yeah.
And if we can find ways to attract and support mm-hmm. our absolute best teachers and align them with struggling learners, I'm telling you.
Okay.
Let me just hold that thought. Mm-hmm. It may be hard for you to do, but hold that thought.
Mm-hmm. I've got to be careful when I get a drink. I know, you spit
out. Don't patronize me.
That's what we do. Okay. Will, I don't know if they will or not, but I see right now a fight coming with the OEA. Do you think they would stand for you to be able to do that?
I'll talk high level for a second. Teachers' unions have been a problem to putting reforms and innovation in the system.
Right.
And the reality is, when I've spoken to them, and I spoke with them last week on something, but when I've spoken to them about these teacher pay proposals, I think our best teachers should make a lot more money. I think that all teacher groups should be supportive of that.
Right.
If you're not, well, that's unfortunate. I think what's best for kids is putting great teachers in the classroom.
Yeah.
I think that we should find ways to incentivize our best and our brightest to stay and be attracted to the profession. So I'm going to champion that. If you want to go out and tell people that you're against teachers making a lot more money, go right ahead.
Okay. My point, when you say great teachers, my experience is the smartest teachers aren't necessarily the best teachers. Those who can communicate and inspire. Because you know yourself in the classroom. Your ability to communicate, inspire, connect doesn't depend on your doctoral dissertation, right? Most of that's of no use to you in the classroom. You want to speak to that?
Yes, and I think that's where, with the bill that I referred to earlier, that hopefully we're going to get done, and we've given six different broad categories as how you show teacher effectiveness. Because to your point, and you're spot on, it teaching is not simply knowing your subject. It's important. You need to know if you don't know your subject, you're not going to be able to deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is the inspiration. There's the relationship building with kids. It helps them inspire. Hey, some of the best, I always take it, I'm a basketball coach and tennis coach also. But, you know, you think about your best coaches. Honestly, some of the best coaches I had, it wasn't that they were X and O geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
They were master motivators.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And
right.
I'd run through a brick wall for them.
Yeah.
And there's that aspect, too. And that's where we wanted to give broad kind of categories. And we looked at Iowa and we looked at Texas and said, now, how have you guys been? Because they have some similar models. And we said, we want to make sure that, by the way, an 11th grade rock star physics teacher looks a lot different than a rock star kindergarten teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make sure that we're able to measure those things and give teachers a variety of ways to show how exceptional they are. But I think you were so spot on with that. It is, honestly, it is content knowledge, passion, and also passion for that content. And then it is how you motivate learners and build a relationship with learners that really is the key to success.
Yeah. I want to take the side of the superintendents, the teachers, even the teachers' union on something. One of the great think tanks that we've had for many years here is the 1889 Institute, Byron Slomack and his team. They put together a spreadsheet a few years ago showing all of the regulatory language that a public school has to deal with. They broke it down to the actual desk size, the lunchroom, the busing, all of that. And I said, no wonder it costs so much because of all of this red tape. I mean, they need people to just, a whole staff of compliance officers. The charter schools were designed to say, you know what, we're going to give you an exemption from a lot of that. So the OEA, the superintendents, and teachers are all going to agree with me on this. Well, if it's okay to exempt the charter schools, why not exempt us too? Answer that.
Great question, and I agree. And I want to say one thing. First of all, one of the things when the charter school bill passed years ago that they put in there, the ability for any public school to be a conversion charter school where they could instantly get almost all waivers of all the regulations
that
they have. Any public school could do it. I know of one public school right now that's utilizing that rule.
Who?
Millwood Public Schools.
Don't you teach there?
Yep, I did. I did last year. So that school utilized it to help get more teachers into the classroom and waive some of those regulations. But public schools could utilize it right now, and they should, number one. Number two, I am all in on wait. Here's the deal, and this is what I think we've got to get away from. We micromanage teachers, we micromanage schools, and then we come to wonder, you know, why aren't we doing more outside the box? You know, and I'm going to tell you, teachers don't get into teaching to have this over-standardized approach of, oh, we're going to do this day, then you have to do this, and it's got to look like this. No, mm-hmm. Teachers get in because they want to work with kids, they want to inspire kids, and they love what they're doing. I mean, again, I had this... I won't go down it too far, but I can remember when I wanted to be a teacher. I had a teacher that was teaching me U.S. history, mm-hmm. and he told us the story of Abraham Lincoln, and he went into this depth about he knew what he was going to do. He was going to be so unpopular through so much of the country, but he believed in his core principles, and so he knew that over time, history would reflect on him as a leader, and so he did it, and he knew that in his life, it probably wouldn't be praised. He knew that it would be a longer play of what was right. And for me, I'm sitting there as a kid, I'm going, that's incredible. That inspires me to think about a leader with that kind of foresight and everything else. And I've been a history nerd ever since. So it's that content knowledge that drives people to want to be in teaching. But we've done so much to micromanage teachers that they go, I'm not able to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the creative control to go into my classroom and teach these subjects from a broad perspective. Our school leaders need to have that kind of control as well to say, look, we want to, again, our school days. I always go back to this. We have our school days set up. In these, you know, well, hey, you guys, let's say, you know, math is your favorite subject. You excel at it. You struggle with math, right? That's mm-hmm. that's your worst subject. Okay. 45 minutes of math every day, 45 minutes of math every mm-hmm. day. Just think about conceptually why.
That's why I mm-hmm. homeschool my kids. Right?
I mean, but because we've done this over, and you'll talk to school leaders and they go, well, and this is a State Department of Education problem. Well, we got to code this and we got to do it this way. And they're going, so honestly, it's the easiest thing for us to do.
Okay. So the legislature over the last decade or so really added to this problem because they felt like when conservatives took over, we'll fix it through more regulation, more hoops to jump through. Even to the point where the legislature had a one size fits all for every third grader with a reading disability. And they took the power away from the teachers, the principal, and the parents. And you know what? They finally realized that's not our call to make. And fortunately, we're starting to see the legislature say, okay, more regulations isn't fixing it. You want to speak to that?
Yeah. And this is where the key for accountability, the key to ensure that schools are working towards every kid's success is giving parents options.
Parents.
And then the transparency so that they see what's going on so they can make informed decisions.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate. You said it well. If you don't go that model, you get into micromanagement. You get into government micromanaging our schools. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. It hasn't worked.
Yeah.
What we have to do is say, we are going to unleash innovation. Again, we need transparency and we need everything to be available so mom and dad can see how schools are doing, how my kid's doing, what my kid's learning, what the curriculum is. All that needs to be very transparent for parents. And allow parents to make the decision whether it's homeschool, private school, public school. And by the way, maybe it's this public school, maybe it's that public school. Mm-hmm. And we did that when we passed the open transfer bill last year. Is we had parents that go, hey, we heard this a lot in kind of rural parts to say, I want my kid in an ag program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now we have, again, you know, some schools offer it, some schools don't. Right. And they're going, well, I go to this public school right here. This public school has it, and it's great. My kid would love a career in that. Can we not transfer my kid to that school? I mean, you just see, again, it's honestly, it's so simplistic, but that's kind of the brilliance of the school choice movement is we don't know what works best for every kid.
Right.
So let's empower the parents.
But that's why local control is so important. And the feds, from their end, they want more of their control and less that's local right. control. That's right. And that's why it's so important for parents and local school boards and state boards to take back that power. And that's why I think that's what the real fight in Florida is right now. That's why everyone needs to support Florida in this. And corporations in Hollywood and all these people, they don't know what they're talking about. To them, it's just a big social issue to be appointing a bunch of radicals from the 60s that are grown up, has been hippies, and wannabes, they have no clue what they're talking about. They never, a lot of them never graduated from high school because they've been in acting careers all their lives. So they don't know what it is. Their kids don't go to real schools or anything. So it's not important to them. But parents who do have kids that go to real schools and where it means something, they need to stand up and fight. And you know, what we were talking about, the salaries and things, I think Joe Biden has a word to say.
Pay them more.
Yeah. And that's bottom line that I think if we can do what you're trying to do, give incentives and put teachers in schools that are failing or that, and administrators too, people that know what they're doing. You don't want just some authoritarian person in a school that, well, you're just going to do what I say and you go ahead and you do this, you do this, you do this. You want people that really know how to, like you say, again, inspire teachers to inspire children. That's the bottom line.
That's right. And I mean, and to your point, you know, we have about one third of our eighth graders are proficient in math. We don't need our kids to be getting curriculum and textbooks that are asking you how you feel about 2 + 2. We need them to know what is 2 + 2. It equals 4. And but you just look at, you said this earlier about the basics, yeah, right? There's a reason why we emphasize the basics of reading, writing, and arithmetic for so long, because we knew, common sense told you, you master the basics. And then, to me, what the model needs to look like is we need our young people to master the basics, and then let's explore. Mm-hmm. Let's get you into a career. Let's do some internships, externships. Career techs can be great for young people. I know we've talked about this story before, but I had a young person come to me before he graduated, and he apologized to me because he wasn't going to go to college. Mm-hmm. And I started asking him, I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, well, you know, I like to weld. Mm-hmm. I found this company online. They'll pay for my welding certificate. They'll send me around the country. You know, that sounds like a great career for me. This young man still sends me selfies. He's an underwater welder now for an oil company.
Wow.
He had zero college debt.
Offshore loves platforms.
Life. Loves it. Okay.
Underwater welder. That's not just a welder. No. Underwater welder. That's a specialty.
But you know, I always go back to, but why did he apologize to me? Yeah. Because he thought the path to success was college, college, college. And he's one of my most successful former students.
Well,
but he took his own path.
Yeah. Yeah, parents can be that way. They want their kid to follow their footsteps. Teachers often do it. They go to maybe a liberal arts college, get an education. Yeah, so that happens. I got one more issue, and I know your time's tight. Can I?
Yeah.
Okay. So you serve not just to advise the governor on public schools, common education, but also higher ed, career tech. The one thing I want to deal with. Most kids, when they go to college, they'll fill out get their FAFSA score, right? Get a Pell Grant. Mm-hmm. Our state money, the bulk of it that's going to higher ed, we instead give close to $1 billion to some appointed board of higher ed regions. And they just use that to take the money off at the top of what it costs for tuition. What if instead we were to take, and maybe split the baby in half here, take a bunch of that money and just match somebody's FAFSA scores and let the student go into college, take it with them to not just a state-funded, state public college, but also our state private universities. We've got some great ones, but what we're doing right now is predatory. We've killed Phillips University, St. Gregory's, because our private schools, colleges have to charge market rates, and yet our state schools are not. Is there any way we could implement some of that that gives, and I know we have the Oklahoma's Promise thing, but that doesn't fit a lot of people. Is there any way we could do something like that to change how we divvy up that higher ed money?
Yes. We, through the legislature and through that appointed Board of Regents, control the formula through which higher ed is paid.
Yeah.
So what we could do is we can change the way that those dollars are allocated. And to me, it's my you know, K-12 policy as well. I think you fund students, not systems. I think you have money follow the individual and allow that. That's how you allow this to fetter out and see who is being successful,
sure,
who's doing what, rather than you give money just at a system level. and you can't push for change. You can't drive it. Honestly, it takes the free market pressure away from the institutions to be reactive to parents, to families. And so I think that's a great suggestion. We can do it. It can go through the legislature. A lot of that can go through the regents. I will say there is a new chancellor. There are multiple new regents. There are a lot of conversations going on with career tech and higher ed. And that's part of in my role now as I try bring them together and go, here's the deal. We're not siloing off.
I've been beating this drum for 6 years. So you really excite me with that. Because let's say it's not unprecedented. That's what we do with the GI Bill, right? Yeah, a lot of our military people go to the university of their choice.
That's right.
Our FAFSA, our federal money, does that.
That's right.
They're more forward thinking and, you know, enabling of the individual empowerment than our state is. Okay. That's all.
And I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, when we talk about all this, I mean, you just see it makes so much sense. We can work on the back end of trying to force certain things to happen, or you unleash the power of the individual and say, here you go. And we're going to allow parents, students to make these decisions of what best meets their needs rather than pushing every kid towards the same path, whether it's, and again, it drives me crazy. I'll go on one more soapbox. I know we got to go.
Go ahead.
But, you know, the stigma around our career tech system and, you know, internships and externships and our trade jobs. These jobs, we need much more of these jobs. They're great paying jobs. Did you guys see Walmart, what they're going to start truck drivers at? $110,000 a year.
Wow.
We have two career techs in the state doing truck driver licensures, and they're doing an accelerated program. And listen to this. I was so proud to go visit one a few weeks ago. They're targeting folks that are coming out of our prison population.
Nice.
And they are having tremendous success. They stick them in the program. They can get out in a few weeks. And think about it. They could go work at Walmart, make $110,000 driving a truck. They've got a new start at life. I mean, our young people need to have these opportunities. The stigma needs to go away from that. Most Oklahomans don't go to college. I'm glad that a lot do. That's not the only pathway to success. And the more you want to tell young people that here's the pathway to success, here's what it looks like, it has to be like this, the more apathetic you're going to get, the less we're going to get people connected with their talents. To me, this is what conservatives believe. We believe in the power of the individual. The far left wants the government to make decisions for us. They want to take away power from parents. I think we have to put power in the hands of parents. We've got to unleash the power of the individual. And if we do this, we can absolutely lead in education.
Well, great. Hey, Ryan, I know you've got another appointment you've got to get to, but this has been really good. If you get a chance between now and primary, and again, of course, afterwards, we'd love to have you come back and we'll dive into this more deeply.
Well, I so appreciate the time. Thank you for what you're doing. I love this format. You guys do such a great job of a deep dive into the issue. So thank you very much. I would absolutely love to come back.
Hey, thank you. And seriously, I mean, we really do want to have you back.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I'll be here.
All right. Thank you. Hey, we're going to take a break, and we will be back after this. This is Eddie Huff with Dave Van Risingham, and you're listening to some Fresh Black Cafe.